Amen. Thank you, Nathan. I've got some good memories of Nathan visiting us in Slovakia. I'll just quickly share two of them. One was that we took Nathan and his mum and dad to Vienna to see the sights in Vienna on a bus tour. And every time Nathan went to sleep, I changed the language to Chinese on the bus tour. So, and then we also managed to lose his mum and dad because we put them on the tram first, the door shut, and they went off, and we lost them in the middle of Vienna. So we had some great experiences with them in when they came and served us, and they did an awesome job. So I'm going to be speaking, and I think I've got till 11:45, and I'll try and keep to time pretty tightly. I'm going to be speaking on global mission, and it's something I'm passionate about. And I didn't realize how passionate I was about it until I couldn't do it anymore in that COVID season where you couldn't travel outside your own home, never mind outside your own country. And I realized I'm more passionate today about global mission than I ever was as a missionary. And I really believe that Jesus' mandate in Acts 1 verse 8 is for everyone, where he says, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And there's one key word that's not in that verse, and that's the word then. It doesn't say, you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem and then all Judea and then Samaria and then to the ends of the earth. There's no then in there. I believe that if we're to be effective in God's mission, then we need to hold these things together with the tension that brings, because I'm assuming that everybody in here is in some sort of church leadership, whether you lead a department, whether you're a pastor, you've got some sort of role in the church. And so often there's a tension between looking out at these sort of things and dealing with the problems that you're facing in your particular ministry right here, right now. And so we have to hold these tensions together. But I believe if we're going to be effective, we need to be missional. And that missional to me, I believe firmly in global mission, but I also believe firmly in local mission. I believe in cross-cultural mission. I believe in regional mission, church planting, and we're going to be talking about all those things today. I'm going to be focused on global mission, but it's part of the big picture. If you're missional, you've got to hold it all together. You can't be missional if you just think, well, it's just my backyard and that's it. Missional people love people, love the mission of God. And so we need to be able to have a focus in all of those areas. And I will start by saying, and I'm sure that everybody will say the same in their sessions, I'm no expert. I'm somebody who's passionate about it. My master's is actually in mission. I was one of four people. Everybody else took theology. I didn't realize how narrow it would be. And four of us took mission as our masters. I've got experience in mission. We've taken over a church in 2016 and refocused it to become missional. So you'd think I'd be a bit more of an expert than I actually am, but I recognize how much of a journey I'm still on with sharpening my own missional outlook, our church's missional outlook. So I'm not talking to you as an expert, I'm talking to you as somebody who's gone on a journey, and I just want to give you some of the things I've learned on that journey about making your church, your environment as missional as possible and having that global aspect to your idea of mission. So I will just say, in my own experience, if coming back in 2016, taking on a church, it probably took us 5 or 6 years to really get the church to think missionally. I think when we came back to our church, now our church had historically, it sent out missionaries. We sent our first missionary out not long after we opened as a church 90 years ago. We were sent out from the church, and also we've got another lady who's currently sent out from our church. So we've got a missional history, but over time, you're sharp at something and then you get dull again. sharp at something and get dull again. And I think when we took over the church, I would rate us at about a 4 or 5 out of 10 in terms of how sharp we were. Now, I think we're probably a 7 or an 8, but we're still on a journey, okay? But we have managed to sharpen some of it. I'll talk about how we found the church. But first of all, what about you? What about your churches that you come from? And this is not like a, I don't want you to be critical about the churches you come from, but just where are you in terms of mission in your church, global mission? How sharp do you would you consider you are as a church? I don't know whether you want to just start, Phil.
Yeah. It goes way back to my infancy. So my journey as a pastor, even before coming here, was always to encourage church to be missional. I had some great disappointments with that along the way, by the way, but also some fruit. Here, we very briefly tended to embrace the verse that you quoted, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, at the end of the earth, locally, regionally, culturally, internationally.
Yeah.
And the mission journey is progressive. There's still more to do, but we thank God for
His efforts to do. Yeah. Do you have a missional department here? How does missions work with, global missions work within ARENA?
I tend to get the lead in that.
Yeah.
You know, close to the Christian and Julie. And also in connection with the board, because we have to obviously have to make financial decisions.
Yeah.
But the key is, like, the key is to moving forward relationships.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll come on to that, because that's one of the things I want to talk about, is relationships. Anybody else? Any other churches? Rob?
I think mine's probably a 4 as well, because we traditionally, before I started leading the church, we've always had missionaries that we support. And I think we've actually got one that we've sent out. But other than that, we've, they are global. I mean, we've got 2 in Spain, 1 in Jamaica.
How this is an important question to ask. How do you think the church in general, the average congregant in your church, not that anybody's average, but how do they relate to the mission? The missionaries got out there and missionaries in general. How do you think the average person relates to them? Do they know what's happening, praying for them? Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's like, well, we do have a mission champion now.
Yes.
She just keeps in touch with them and sends, you know, newsletters or whatever. But I'm conscious she could do more, but you know, we don't want to be critical. So you know, but I think it's only coming to
update. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Anybody else want to share where you're at in terms of your church? Go on. Sorry. Yeah, you're Christine's from my church, so yeah. Right, okay.
20 years ago. And I served in the church in Derby for over 20 years. And now it's called me to ARENA Belfast, where I'm working towards his schools, his mission within the church. And at the moment, we haven't got much out in the common. Global mission, but the base is being set.
Yeah, I think, and I'm in no way being critical of any church, because I know how hard it is. You know, I'm an ex-missionary. I've got a master's in mission, and it's taken us 5 or 6 years to get the church from like a 4 to a 7. So I'm not being critical of any. I know how hard it is in the middle of repurposing, pastoring, dealing with funerals, marriages and everything, to have a vision for global mission. But it's good just to have a little bit of a think about where we are. And I think what some of you have said is similar to how we were. As a church, we've always given 10% of anything that comes into general funds into a missions budget, which then goes overseas. So that's been historically. So it's quite a good foundation. When missionaries came through, we would also give another offering as well. So there was a generally good foundation. So maybe about 11-12% of our budget each year would go towards overseas mission. But I think the average person in the church was quite detached from what was going on around the world. There was no real connection between the missionaries and the average person in the church, to the sites we were going to. And so there was that separation between just a small committee. We had a missions committee that dealt with the missionaries, the contacts, the sending of funds, and the rest of the church. And so our job, really, we knew if we were going to sharpen our edge in the area of missions, we had to get rid of that gap. We had to get rid of that gap between the whole congregation and that mission drive. That mission had to start to become part of what we do as a church, who we are as a church. And I think we have moved up the scale, and I just want to share some of the things that we've done in order to do that as a church. And maybe, hopefully, through that, you can pick up some things. So I've split it up into six different points. Focus, pray, give, go, send, and support. And there's more than that when it comes to global mission. But these are areas you can really look at if you want to help to sharpen up missions within your own church. So first of all, focus. So often in churches, it was in our church, just listening here, it certainly seems that way. Missions was a department, a committee that dealt with that. And money went there, so that was good. But actually, that was it. That was it. It was something on the periphery, just like some of the other ministries were just on the periphery. Personally, I knew that couldn't continue like that. My own story is that after, when I really got a grip with this, was after COVID and all that time of being safe, God sent me to Ukraine where it wasn't very safe. And it was there that I felt so alive and realized that I had to get the church back onto its missional, because that's how we're going to disciple people, find purpose of what God wants them to do. It's going to be through us being missional as a church. And that's really when we stepped out in church planting and we stepped out taking people on global mission. But it's been a fight, actually. It's not been easy to do that. It's not been easy to get the church. And some people actually, when we started to focus on mission, left us because it wasn't really, they were more focused on just the department, just the local, just, and not just the church locally, but just what they were doing locally. And so to try and get the church, the whole church focused on it, we really had to make it central. So we made it central to our strategy. We actually looked at our vision and just tweaked it a little bit. There was nothing wrong with the vision. It was a God-given vision. But we tweaked it a little bit to make sure that people knew when they came to our church, we were all about God's mission, whether that's local or... So we changed some of the words we used. Before, it was something like, I can't remember now exactly, but it was something like, we are a church that live out our values, plant churches, and develop people through a Bible school. And so... A few years ago, I changed the wording of that. Kept it the same. The vision's the same, but just changed the wording. And this is our statement of who we are. We are a church with a missional culture. We plant missional locations. So I didn't even call them churches anymore. They're missional locations. When a church starts, it's missional straight away. It's not meant to build itself. It's meant to build out. So we're a church with a missional culture, plants missional locations, and develops missional people through a mission school. You might notice there's four uses of the word missions in that one sentence, because I wanted everybody to know this is what we're about as a church. And so we started to use those phrases and to make sure that missions became central. And like I say, when I say missions, for me, it actually incorporates the local as well as the global. But missions had to be central to everything we do. Started to really make it central in preaching as well. We started to talk more about mission with our leaders. In our leadership meetings, started to talk more about it with the church. And interestingly, you'll have heard this verse used in James chapter 3, verse 4. But what we sometimes forget is the context in which it's used. It talks about sailing ships are driven by strong winds, but a small rudder turns a large ship whatever way the man at the wheel wants the ship to go. And it's talking about the power of the tongue. And we often talk about that in terms of how we use our tongues in everyday conversations and personally. But the start of that chapter, just a couple of verses before, James is talking to people who teach in the church. What you teach into the church steers it. What you preach regularly into the church, into your leadership meetings and so on, it steers the church. And so we needed to make sure that we were regularly talking about the mission of God for our church. And so it became a key thing that we brought into the pulpit to set the direction. We've got to use our tongues well if we're going to cause a focus on mission. And then we had to resource it. So one of the things we've done over the last few years is we've increased our missions team. So, and we're looking to increase it still. We want to bring some younger people onto the missions team. We've got our mission champion in the room. But actually, at one point, and for a few years after we first took over, there was just three of us looking at missions in the church. And we realized we're making decisions on behalf of the whole church. And we need to increase the accountability, increase the commitments. And so we've started to really increase that team, have the prayer team pray into it, and really increase the amount of people that were focused on mission. And we also had to increase our giving into mission. That was really important. We knew if we were going to really start to make a difference, we had to, you know, the Bible speaks about your heart. And it speaks about money. And what's important to us, we finance. And so we knew we had to increase the budget. So we did have 10% going in from the general funds, which added to a bit, made it just over 10% that we gave. We've managed, I think last year we increased it from the year before by 15%. We've increased it a little bit each year. I think we're now on about 15 or 16% of our general budget of our total income goes towards overseas missions. We created a budget for sending. We created that 2 years before we sent our first short-term missions trip, because we knew if it was going to be a focus in the church, it had to be part. And so one of the people we brought onto the team for missions was our treasurer. You know, bring the financial decision making into the team. So if you're going to make it a focus, you've got to resource it, and then you've got to try and make it accessible. We've got to make it accessible to the whole church to get involved. So mission before about 2022 was something in general that me and Liz did in our church. We did a lot of mission, but we just did it. But we had to make it accessible to everybody, and so we started to think of ways of making it accessible. We created the sending fund. We got the prayer teams involved. Last night, actually, we had a quiz that was all done to raise money for the latest mission team that's going to go out to Budapest in a month's time. But it meant that the whole church could get involved in that mission trip, even though there's only six people going. The whole church is suddenly involved in that. And so you've got to try and make missions as accessible as possible to every member of the church if we're going to sharpen up our missions endeavor. You can do it through giving, going, and praying. Even people that aren't able to get involved in going can get involved in praying. Try and get your whole church involved in global mission. So you've got to have a focus. You've got to pray. I mean, that sounds like I'm teaching to suck eggs, and I am, but actually we forget to suck them sometimes. We've got to get prayer focused for our mission. Now, I know as an ex-missionary, if you've heard my testimony, you know we went through some real dark times when we're on the mission field, and we felt supported by the prayer of people that didn't know our situation. But they lifted us and carried us through this situation. Your prayers really make a difference. And it's good to be strategic. So we need to pray specifically. Missionaries will, in general, send you the highlights of what's going on. Because there's a pressure to do that. And you feel the pressure as a missionary to send the highlights. Very rarely will they actually just really send you how they're really feeling right at that moment. The amount of people that have left the church at that moment, or the and that's the reality of what's going on. There was a couple of churches, and it wasn't actually my own church, but there was a couple of churches where they really adopted us, and I would sit down with the pastor when we were itinerating and just say, "Oh, it's been a terrible year. We've done all these evangelism, nobody's come. We've done this, and it's been a hard year." And he would tell me some of the things that he'd been. But it was through that relationship, and that church, it wasn't supporting us based on how successful we were. It was supporting us based on they were supporting us to do God's will. You know, I always say this: success is God's job, faithfulness is ours. And so we need to create relationships with missionaries where they can be honest, where we can really support them. We had an honest conversation with one of the missionaries that actually sent out from our church, and we realized that we weren't supporting it as we should have done, because we were sending money, we were receiving the newsletters, but we weren't asking the deeper questions. And so Liz and I took it on ourselves, because she's from our church, that every 2 months we have a Zoom call with her, pray with her, and just really ask her those questions of, how are you really doing? Just forget what's on the newsletter for a second. How are you really doing? So your prayer becomes so much more effective because you really know what to pray for. Make missions prayer regular and visible. And one of the things we've done to do that is our treasurer, every time she sends money across to the missions, sends it out on WhatsApp to the whole church saying, "We've just sent money to this person. They're doing a great job in this country. Let's make sure we're praying for them." And it's just made it accessible and visible to the whole church. There's so many tools and resources. We created a missions board. I've seen some great examples across the churches of what you can do to get mission into the hearts of every person in your church. Pray, give. We need to teach about giving into missions, because people like to give to something they can actually see sometimes. You know, if you've got a local project, it's easy to give to, but if you're giving something over there that you're not going to see, you're not going to benefit from, it's sometimes a little bit more challenging. So we need to teach into missional giving. Giving needs to be part of the church's DNA. If you don't, if you're a leader in the church and you don't automatically send money into a missions budget, I want to encourage you to prayerfully consider doing that. Prayerfully consider creating it just a natural outflow from your church into missions. Be transparent and share impact. So try and get regular stories. This is something we've been weak on that we're trying to improve in our church, is getting regular stories from the missionaries and highlighting them on a Sunday. We've been talking about increasing the amount of mission Sundays we have throughout a year, because people need to see, your regular person in the congregation needs to see what's going on around the world. So be transparent and share impact. Encourage sacrificial and strategic giving. And finally, we as leaders need to set the tone for this. You know, in our giving, in our resourcing, in the praying, we need to lead by example. Even in the going, which I'll come on to in a second. We need to set the example. So the giving. The going. It's my aim, we haven't achieved it yet, but we're getting there, to get every leader in our church on a short-term mission. We want to get every leader in the church on a short-term mission, and then we want to get the leaders in the church to take others on a short-term mission. We want to get the whole church involved in short-term missions, but not for the sake of doing short-term missions. Short-term missions are great for a number of reasons. They've also got the weaknesses as well. I'm not going to go into that today, but to make your short-term mission most effective, it's when it's connected to a long-term mission goal. I always say this, that you won't change the world on a short-term mission, but you can provide encouragement and strength to somebody who's changing their part of the world. And that's the aim of a short-term mission. It's to provide encouragement and strength to somebody who is changing where they are. And if we can go with that sort of attitude with relationship, short-term missions become extremely effective. And I want to say this, like I say, it's our aim in the church to try and get every leader, eventually every congregant, where physically possible, on some sort of short-term mission. But we're starting trying to get all the leaders on short-term missions, because we know that it's got to filter down. We've got to lead the way in this. Just very practically, if any of you are wondering about short-term missions and going, I'm actually leading one in September, and that's for pastors, children's workers. I'm leading one to minister to leaders in Hungary and Slovakia. If you want to know more about that, it's just we've literally created that in order to give leaders an experience of mission so that they can then lead missions in the future. So if you are interested, let me know. But lead the way. Make it a part of your normal discipleship pathway. There's one church I know who's ahead of us, one church, it's literally called one church, who when somebody comes in after their first discipleship course, they say to them, so which mission do you want to go on? And they make it part of discipleship. They make it part of somebody's journey going on mission. Going on mission. And you can do that. I find personally taking somebody with me on a mission trip, even if I just take one person, and I do this now wherever I go, so even if I go preach somewhere else, I always take a young guy with me who's, and I always take them with me to just to pray with, but also just to disciple, just to be with them, to impart into them. It just creates that culture. It's part of the normal discipleship pathway. If you do take people on short-term mission, I want to suggest this, you create opportunity for them to testify afterwards. So last year as a church, we did three short-term missions, and afterwards, after each of those missions, we gave space in the main Sunday meeting for them to testify about their experiences. Because what it does, it inspires the next person. Inspires the next person. So create space. Get the whole church involved as much as possible. If you're doing a mission trip, you're only going to take a few people, but you can get the whole church involved. Last year, with two of our mission trips. One was to Ukraine. We got the whole church involved by having a prayer, because it was a particularly dangerous trip. We had a prayer rota going on throughout the trip. We also did a trip later on in the year to Bulgaria. We did it with WOW. And it was to take, it was a bit like, what's the one with Samaritan's Purse do with the boxes? The Christmas box appeal. It was similar to that, the shoebox appeal, that's it, sorry. The shoebox, it was similar to that, it was done with WOW. We were going into very poor communities in Bulgaria doing something very similar. But we got the whole church in about October packing, we were doing it with these bags, packing the bags, buying the stuff for the bags. So although only four people went on that mission trip, probably about 85% of the church were involved in the mission in some way. So you're getting the whole church involved in mission. And also, if you are doing mission trips with your missionaries, then also you're supporting them. You're focusing the whole church on the missionaries that you are supporting. So I want to recommend that. We partner with trusted mission organisations. If you aren't able to do it, there's other people that can. That's why we did one of ours last year with WOW, because they're set up for it. If you're part of Becky's One by One, they're set up for it. So you can use the strength of these organisations to help that and really invest in the next generation. Don't let your young people ask, why not me? Last year, I actually took both my kids. So Noah went on a mission trip, instigated by him. My Noah he was 13 last year, and we took him to evangelize in Czech. And as a father, I was amazed. We, just to give you one testimony from that, we did an evangelistic crusade in the town. I preached. Afterwards, we had the prayer line, and it went on for hours. And Noah was standing by me and just praying with me at first. And then he took the translator off on him by himself and was praying over people. After about an hour and a half, I got a bit tired and had to go out for a break because the prayer line was still there. Came back in, he was still praying for people. I'm like, wow. But invest in your next generation. Invest in the next generation. It's there that they're going to find the seeds that's going to it's going to change them. It's going to change their future. I know that personally. I'm where I am because somebody took me on mission. My youth pastor. He took me to places. When he was going to places, he made sure he never went alone. He always took somebody along with him that he could invest into, and I was one of those people. Send. You know, Jesus told us to pray for workers for the harvest field, didn't he? How many of you have prayed for workers for your harvest field? Okay. Well, let me just say this. In your church, there may be the answer to somebody else's prayer. Let's think of it that way a second. Your church might contain the person who's the answer to somebody who's praying somewhere else. So if we want God to answer our prayer to send workers into our harvest field, let's be generous with the people that God has got in our churches that he wants us to send out. So we need to think about being sending churches. So do that, we create opportunities. So it relates to the short-term missions. Short-term missions is a great way of experiencing mission and getting excited for mission. It's how we, as missionaries, started off. And it's how, in fact, most of the missionaries I've spoken to started off by going on short-term mission, and God just did something. God just did something. So create opportunities, and especially for your young people, just create opportunities for them to experience mission. As I mentioned before, connect local and global objectives. So mission globally and mission locally, they shouldn't be totally two different things. You know, if somebody has got starts to get the fire for mission, then what they can do abroad, they can also do at home, and vice versa. For our latest mission, we're going to Budapest to do evangelism. We've got an evangelist coming to us to train us, but he's training the whole church, and we're going to put it in practice in our town before we go to another country. And then what I'm hoping is that the people that have been to the other country will come home with a fire to do even more in their town. So connect your local and connect your global. If you're sending, take ownership. So some of you, if you're sending missionaries abroad, don't rely on the mission organisation. We've got one of our ladies is sent with OM, and she's gone out with OM. We've got missionaries that connected to us through the AOG. But actually, as the local church, we are responsible. Not OM, we are responsible. For their pastoral care is on us. And we need to take ownership of the pastoral care. The primary responsibility belongs to us. If we need to stand behind our missionaries, like I say, I had a conversation with a missionary only about 3 years ago, and I realized we weren't looking after her well enough. And like I say, we're ex-missionaries, we should know better. But we realise we're not looking after her well enough. And so we started to put a plan in place to look after her better. And so you need to take ownership. If you've sent out missionaries, take ownership of their welfare. And the final thing I want to say to this is send your best. I often joke, we've all got people in our church we'd like to send to Afghanistan. I don't use that joke in my own church, I've got to say. And Christine, don't say anything. But but God wants us to send our best. Send our best. Last year, we sent our daughter, Jessica. Now, she was involved in everything in the church. She's one of those multi-skilled people that can be involved in. She can lead worship, she does children's work, she does youth work, and all those people. So she's one of those people you don't want to really lose. But we knew for her sake, she needed to go on, take a year out and go off on mission. So she's been in Austria serving there. So we were challenged. Send your best. Send your best. God showed me this, and I quote it, I say it quite often. When you send your best, you don't lose a person, you gain a harvest field. If you want to write anything down, write that down. When you send your best, you don't lose a person, you gain a harvest field. Their fruit is your fruit. So we've got somebody serving right now in Madagascar. She grew up in our church, she's about late 20s now, and she's serving in Madagascar. And she's been serving there for a number of years. She's working with unreached people groups. So these are people that have never heard the gospel. And some of the stories that have come back as we've talked with her, she's just had a case where one of the elders in the church that they set up, her husband was murdered, and now the culture in that village is they want to then murder all the brothers of the murderer because the murderer has escaped off. So traditionally, the brothers then have to take the punishment for. How do you pastorally deal with that in your church? But she's dealing with all these sorts of things and setting up church in places that have never, ever been reached with the gospel. And it's like, that's amazing. Our church, we're in a small town in Biddleford, now got two campuses, but we're in a small place, and yet we can have an impact. Sending her out, and she would be really useful in the home. She's a great children's worker. She'd be really useful in our church. But actually, out there, we've gained a harvest field that we can say is our harvest field. And that's wonderful. When you send your best, you don't lose a person, you gain a harvest field. I want to encourage you in that. And then support. We've got to learn to support well. We've got to stay relationally connected. We've got to don't just leave it on one person to stay relationally connected. This is what we realised actually as a team, that we just left it to the mission champion to have relational connections with our missionaries, and we realised it needed to be spread out. Now, we haven't got this perfect yet. We're still on a journey to make that happen. But actually stay relationally connected with your missionaries. Missionaries often feel forgotten. And it shouldn't be the case. So let's not rely on just receiving their reports, newsletters, and then just sending the odds, okay, amen, we're praying for you, doing well. But let's stay relationally connected to what they are doing. Maybe if you're organising a short-term trip, organise it to where they are. Provide that support. As I've said, short-term missions work the best, the most effective when they're connected to the long-term objectives. How can you support that person? Let them know that they're still part of the family. Include them, if you can, on WhatsApp groups for your church. They may find it annoying, but make sure that they stay part of the family of your church. This is something we're in process of doing. We haven't done it fully yet, but create a missions care team for your missionaries that are out there. Support the whole person. You know, missionaries are often caring for others, and it's not just money or prayer that they need, but actually just sometimes it's just asking them how they are. Sometimes it's just a call, a Zoom call, where they can offload some of their frustrations that they can't offload locally. But support the whole person. And also be there in transition. Some of them will be transitioning from one place to another. Especially if a missionary comes back, that's incredibly important that you support them well. If a missionary comes back to your church who's been abroad, support them well. Reverse culture shock is often far worse than initial culture shock. Coming back to a country that you think is home and realizing it's changed and you've changed and you've not got an idea of what's going on is actually worse than going into a culture where you know it's going to be different. And so many, especially if you've been out there for quite a few years, so many missionaries struggle terribly with reverse culture shock. And champion them with, make it visible within your church. If you're supporting somebody, get it regular. You know, we're constantly talking about Mission Sundays. We've got one coming up soon. We're actually having a conversation on in the car on the way here. Make it natural, part of the church's rhythm, to